Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I'm Baker Smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts to rock. I'm a member of the Red Sox.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. For those of you staying up late tonight on Periscope, the podcast can be found, as always, on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and literally wherever you can find it on Google. With me tonight, as always, is Jeremy Schilling and Liz Churchville. How are you?
Great.
I'm awesome. I can't agree with the always for me. I think it's been, I looked at my notes, it's been a little over a month, but you guys have been killing it without me and extra people, but it feels good to be back.
Well, you're here with us in spirit, though, so it still applies.
I try to chime in on the tweets of the show if I hear something that that I want to call out, you know, Devil Rays related and whatnot.
Did you just say go. Devil Rays?
She did. She's finally back to 1998. I love it.
Ugh.
Well,
ugh.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm just so sick of this stale free agent market. And, you know, the big two haven't signed, and I don't even really care to discuss them tonight. You know, just some little things happening, but we're like 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. I tweeted the other week, like, I finally, like, have solid plans, bought tickets. I'm finally going to Fenway South. I've been wanting to go for a long time, admittedly, just because it seemed like a really cool park. And so I'm finally getting to do it this year. I'm going to Red Sox Mets on the 9th. And then coincidentally, the Red Sox play the Rays the very next day in Port Charlotte. So we're going to that too. So I'm getting to knock them both out really quick and get some spring training in down in Fort Myers and Port Charlotte this year. But yeah, the first game of the season, I noticed when I was looking at the schedule and trying to figure out when I could go, what the best time was, is the 22nd of February. Like, that seems super early to me. Is it early, or is it just me thinking it's usually just March?
That's about right, I feel like.
Really? Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's usually the games start with, you know, the college thing where they, for whatever reason, play Northeastern, BC, you know, and then they go over like right into the Twins. Sometimes it gets earlier. I remember when they had to travel for Japan, when Manny was still in there, they started spring training really early that year. So a lot of it is predicated based on when the regular season starts. And for some teams, that's a little bit earlier, especially if you're playing in that opening day. For us, it seems pretty normal this year. Okay. Terry, getting to your point, this is, and I mentioned this probably like 6 weeks ago, where Major League Baseball, or at least the teams generally speaking, have really made a concerted effort to bring the market back down to earth, where you're seeing more 2-year deals. And these are like talented veteran players that 10 years ago all things being the same, would have gotten, you know, 6-7 year contracts. Now it's these 2 year deals. And to the extent like Pollock signed, I think, was it 4 years, 55 million or 5 years, 55 million, whatever it was, but it's loaded with opt-outs. So if he's productive after year one or two, he's not going to stay. And I know we're going to get into him a little bit later. So the teams are just not overspending. And I think they're going to overspend for Harper and Machado. It's going to be Philly. It's going to be the White Sox more likely than not. But their overspending is a little bit different than it was with Pujols and Cano and some of these other guys, A-Rod, Teixeira. So the overspend is going to be even less. So there's just been a market correction. And while I am extremely frustrated that we really don't know where key superstar players are going to be playing yet, it gives me some hope. And we've hit this really a lot, so I'm just going to just say this briefly. It gives me hope that maybe we can have a chance at signing some of our guys that maybe we thought we didn't. Mookie, I still think Mookie's going to price himself out of Boston either way, but maybe Benintendi's a little bit less. Maybe Bogarts is a little bit less. You know, so it's one of those things where maybe, just maybe, this whole thing in the long run, whether it be next offseason or down the road, it brings the price of the current Red Sox players down so that they can sign them in free agency.
That's the hope, as you know, we get closer to that CBA, and fortunately, most of these contracts expire, you know, before then. So, you know, if a potential strike happens.
Well, I know we want to talk about Bogarts first, but that kind of leads into like a question that I had, because about the bullpen and how they're really not doing anything to like get anybody, you know, right now. Do you think, you know, maybe they're trying to save a little bit of that salary for that very reason? Like they want to try and keep Mookie, maybe keep a bunch of guys. I mean, isn't Sale up next year?
That's a really good question. Except, so the question's really good. I think the answer to it is relatively simple, and that's no, except for the closer spot, because you're not going to over it. Like the way you build bullpens and the costs associated with building a bullpen should never have an effect on your overall roster, unless it's the closer. So if you're paying a guy $17 million a year, obviously that's going to have an effect on a guy like Mookie, who's somewhere in the $25 to $30 million range, or a guy like Bogarts, who's probably in $20 million a year range. But if you're paying $5 million for a setup, $6 million for a setup guy, $7 million, and then the rest of your guys are somewhere between one and five, that, I'm sorry, you're the Boston Red Sox. It should have zero effect. And which brings me to the second half of my answer, which I have no idea why they haven't addressed the bullpen. Every single bullpen arm that was out there that was considered above average or elite is gone, except for Kimbrel, and he's a closer, not a bullpen guy, you know, a middle, you know, a seventh, eighth inning guy. So I don't think it has any effect on it. I think where it would have an effect would be like what they do with JBJ in center field. Or if you were to be going after a big name guy, like, for example, the Yankees passing on Machado and Harper and signing, and I'm going to space it on his name, but the middle infielder they signed 2 weeks ago, that's the sort of signing where you can say, okay, they're saving money for something else. But as on a bullpen, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, it has mostly to do with the luxury tax threshold, like the final one. There's at least two of them. And they're trying to stay under that last one because the penalties will get pretty severe. And if you remember back to the winter meetings, Bogarts, Porcello, and Bradley were available, you know, for a little while. And apparently Dombrowski was pretty aggressive trying to trade Bradley, but didn't find a deal to his liking. And same with Porcello. He was fairly aggressive trying to move him. And they combine for $28 million this year on the books. So I think there were multiple moving parts there. But when none of that materialized, and we're just, I think we're just like $3 or $4 million under that final threshold, you know, that's what it is for this year. And then, as we were saying, a lot of money comes off the books after this season, including the Sandoval contract. So you'll probably see, you know, some activity. And we also have, Lakins and Feltman that will at least get a look this year and maybe kind of help the plans for next year.
Yeah, I was really thinking about that. I mean, it's funny that Jeremy always says, "I'm sorry you're the Boston Red Sox," but then it always goes back to, "Oh, well, you know, Mookie's going to price himself out of the market," you know, kind of a thing. It's weird how both those statements always get said, you know, a lot, even though I know, like, a pitcher is different, you know, they're going to get a lot different contract than, like, Mookie is going to, but still, it's funny that both those statements came out in, like, the same couple of minutes there.
That's a good point, and I like when people call me out on stuff and give me an opportunity to hopefully explain why I say that. The Red Sox are always going to be at the threshold because they're going to have players like Bogarts, like JBJ, like Sale, like Price. They're going to have their veteran players are going to cost $5 or $6 million, like Pierce and Moreland. Their second baseman's getting $17 million a year. They pay their utility guys $4 million a year, like Nunez. And so where they spend everywhere, they're always going to be the Red Sox are always going to be at that point. And so when it comes to $4 or $5 million for a middle reliever, you're the Boston Red Sox. You should be able to handle that. If you want to re-sign Sale, Porcello or Keuchel or something to that effect, you're going to have the money if the market dictates a fair number. The problem with Mookie is that his number is not going to be a quote-unquote fair. It's going to be potentially the highest contract in the history of baseball. Teams that have the money to spend like that are typically teams that have underspent everywhere else, and the perfect example of that is that the Phillies have no big name talent. I mean, they spent money on, I'm spacing it on his name right now, but the right-handed pitcher from Chicago.
Arrieta.
Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, Jake Arrieta. Sorry, thank you. The White Sox have no money spent on anybody. They literally have no money expended. I mean, it's crazy. Their payroll is, you know, they just don't. So of course they can spend $30 million because they're still not going to be at the luxury tax threshold because they don't have any money expended anywhere else. But you're the Boston Red Sox. You have $5 million invested in every single position, every single, you know, three relievers and a closer all across the board. So you're not going to be able to absorb a 35. Some people have said Mookie's worth $40 million a year. They can't do that because then they have to become the White Sox or the Phillies, where now they have to go out and they have to pay the minimum for a left fielder, and now they can't sign a catcher, so they got to go with a Triple A catcher and weaken the spots in other areas. That's not how they're spending their money. They're spending their money on every single position. And Mookie's going to price himself out of Boston for that reason.
Well, I mean, I guess that kind of leads into the Bogarts situation where they had a failure at signing that extension with him this year, and he'll be a free agent at the end of this year, I think, and everything. So, losing him, I mean, they could probably plug somebody, maybe not as good as him, but serviceable and, you know, pretty good, you know, into that position pretty easily. I mean, I'm not super familiar with all the bench people that might cover for him, but I mean, how much do you think him in the free agent market, you know, would drive to, like, how much will they save letting go of Bogarts and maybe potentially being able to invest that money into somebody like Mookie or extending Benintendi or whatever they want to do? I don't think they should re-sign Sale. I don't know, unless he, you know, is back 100%, you know, no sign of injury or weirdness, you know, this season, you know, I wouldn't extend him necessarily. I think that's just a big, you know, mistake, Tommy John, something, I don't know, waiting to happen, but what kind of value do you think Bogarts has that'll end up being freed up if they just let him go?
So he's getting $12 million this year in his final year of arbitration. Just for comparison's sake, Mookie, who still has this year and next year left, is getting $20 million. So there's the way that the price of this player is significantly less than a guy like Mookie. I think that Bogarts and Benintendi are the same class of player. They're both very good players. They both have multiple tools. And I think Bogarts will get 15 to 20 million per year. There's always that possibility of somebody going crazy, right? You know, the Mets come out and give the guy 25 million, then, and that's the Mets. They can do that. You want to be an idiot? Go be an idiot. The Sox aren't going to do that. Bogarts is 26. He'll be 27 in his first year of unrestricted free agency. He's crazy young. He's a very good player. He's been on two World Series teams. I think he's a player the Red Sox clearly covet and want, but I don't think they're going to get crazy with him either. I would rather them sign Bogarts and Benintendi and a pitcher versus just Mookie Betts. So for me, Xander presents less of a financial burden. What it ultimately ends up being, I'm not exactly sure. But let me just say this, and I know Terry's itching at the trigger finger here to bring this topic up. He's a Boris guy. Now, here's the problem with Boris guys, because it's a misnomer in my opinion that Boris guys always get top of the market. They don't. They do not always get top of the market. But Boris will drag that process out to the last goddamn day. And that is a situation where that would put Bogarts in jeopardy, because the Red Sox aren't going to sit by with a hole at shortstop. If Bogarts finishes this year without a contract, and I don't think it's completely out of the question that hopefully he signs by the end of spring training. It looks like it would have been done by now, so it's not looking great. But if he finishes this year, doesn't have a contract, and Boris convinces him to go into free agency and to squeeze every last dollar out of his contract, I envision a situation where the Red Sox don't wait around. They either identify a veteran or they trade for somebody, you know, or whatever the situation is. They're not going to go this late into next offseason with nobody at shortstop. They just won't. And so that's the thing that scares me the most, is Boris's involvement. Terry?
I agree that he's going to, you know, wait for an offer, or at least try to wait for an offer that suits him. I think where the Boris factor comes in is it eliminates any realistic possibility of an early signing. I think it's 50-50 whether or not the Red Sox ultimately sign him next offseason. But when I was digging in to try to figure out, you know, the how the talks went a couple weeks ago, because we speculated it was Benintendi like Evan Drellick did, and it turned out we were way off and it was Bogarts. And I think we even ruled out Bogarts because he was a Boris client. And I forget, we had two alternate guys that we talked about that could have been the mystery extension candidate. And I know one of them was Martinez, and I don't know who we thought the other one, or at least who I brought up. So Bogarts wasn't on my radar. And by all reports that I read, the talks never went anywhere. So how I read into that is the Red Sox probably took their temperature on it, Bogarts and Boris, and the Red Sox were probably at 90 or 100 million over, you know, 5 or 6 years. And then Boris probably came in and said, no, he's a 140 to 160 guy. And then the talks went away, because all reports said they weren't even close. Like the talks never even went far. So I think they just kind of compared numbers and said, all right, we'll wait till next season. And the reason why I hope he does get signed, I probably want him signed more than anyone other than maybe Martinez if he opts out, and I expect he will. I think Martinez ultimately will impact our future bigger than Bogarts, but I do covet Bogarts because, like you alluded to, we don't have any shortstops in the system. Chavis and Dahlbeck, they're both corner infielders. They could probably be converted into left fielders, but they're not middle infielders by any means. So we don't have any stud prospect in the pipeline as of yet. Unless somebody emerges in AA or AAA this year and just suddenly goes off the charts, it's a lot easier. Well, I shouldn't say easier to replace Mookie Betts, but there's a lot more highly serviceable options that you could plug into right field if Mookie signs with someone else than it is to plug into shortstop where Bogarts has been. And as you were going through that, I was trying to think in my head, where is Bogarts, you know, compared to all the best shortstops? You know, I mean, he's, I don't know where you'd put him against Correa. I'm drawing blanks right now. But he's probably a top four or five shortstop at the worst. So hard to replace a guy like that.
Yeah. First of all, he's not Correa. Okay. So not Correa. I have him in the 5 to 10 range. And because shortstop's such an important position, you know, if you can get a guy who can hit 20 home runs, and I think he had exactly 100 RBIs, although I don't have his stats up in front of me right now. That, I mean, those are the sorts of production you were getting in the steroid era. So he's going to be coveted. He's going to be, and he's going to get a lot of money. I thought you were right on. If I said, look, Bogey, we'll pay you $20 million this year. We'll give you an $8 million pay bump to $20 million this year. We'll buy your last year. But we get you for 5 years, $100 million. I'd do it yesterday. And I also, and as much as that makes sense, if I'm the Boston Red Sox, it also makes sense, if, in my opinion, that Xander not take it, because there's a potential that he could get more than that. Now, what I led off with today was the current, what's happening to Harper and Machado. Bogarts has to be watching that. And again, I go back to who his agent is. His agent is the biggest blowhard in sports agency on any level that I can name off the top of my head. A lot of it is about ego for Boris. And you know, I don't know many other agents that will like do press conferences and like show up to like. You know, I mean, he literally takes interviews. Like, get the fuck out of here. You're just an agent guy. And I think he's going to get in the way of it. And I don't know what their options would be. I looked at briefly. CJ Chatham is a shortstop they drafted 51st overall in 2016. He just got to Class A Salem in May of 2018. He missed an entire year due to injury. His stats offensively are, there's just nothing there. They're not necessarily bad. They're not great. In his one full year with the GCL Red Sox, he hit .259. So it's like, you're right. They don't have anybody, and you can't convert a corner outfielder to play shortstop. You can't. It's too important of a defensive position. And that's where another thing is, if Bogarts is smart, and he is smart, he knows that he probably has the Red Sox over a barrel. So it's problematic, and it brings up that there's a lot of unknown in the future, not necessarily this year, because I think if you lose Bogarts, everyone else is still coming back except for maybe Sale and Porcello next year. So you're still going to be really competitive in 2020. It's then after that, then Mookie comes up, and then you're a year away from Benintendi. And now you're potentially in a position where things start rolling downhill and getting away from you if you don't get these guys at dollars that make sense. So
I just got a few names here that I was looking at as far as where we could rank him. I think he does come out about fourth or fifth. I think we could all agree that Correa is better. We would all put Lindor, and maybe Lindor is even the number one shortstop. Machado's listed as a shortstop, but I'm going to move him over to third base. And let's see. And then you could lump guys like Gene Segura and Drelton Simmons. They're about on par with what Bogaerts is. Bogaerts was fifth in average last year, and that's with Machado in there also, by the way. And then he was second in OBP, and let's see where he was, runs batted in. Third on the RBI list. So a few key, you know, offensive categories. And last year was probably his best year, so I guess if there's any regression, you know, maybe he does slip. But regardless, he is, you know, one of the better shortstops in the league. He's only going to be 27, 28 years old. And I think it's going to come down to years, ultimately. I don't think his value much exceeds $20 million. You mentioned the, you know, the 20 a year for 5 years, so that's 100. I think Boris is going to want a couple years tacked onto that. And the comparable contract, really, that I've brought up a couple of times, and I'm just really sticking with it, is it's going to be similar to an Eric Hosmer contract from a couple years ago. And I mean, it took the Padres to be like a mystery team at the last minute to get Hosmer, you know, that type of money. But, you know, I think Bogaerts has a little bit more upside than he does anyway. And I think that's what Boris is going to be looking for, but it's the weirdest market ever. So who knows what next year is even going to bring, you know, as far as, you know, the value for the top free agents. Liz, yeah, what
definitely.
Are your thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You guys far surpass any knowledge base I have on any of that. But it really makes me wonder, like, if he's that good and they're that concerned, like, what was the dollars and cents that it come down to that, like, could they have pushed, you know, a couple more million or whatever? Would that have really hurt them? You know, is it going to benefit them more to wait? I mean, there's so many unknown factors, like, really now, you know, particularly with, you know, I was thinking about this week. It almost seems like, and maybe they did all get together, who knows, all the owners, you know, got together and or managers or whoever, you know, and decided, hey, you know, we're sick of this. You know, we're all, like, they almost staged a coup in a way. You know, we're not going to deal with these players demanding all this money from us all the time. So, you know, nobody sign anything, you know, too wild, even though, you know, the Phillies are kind of the wild card in this whole deal, throwing down whatever anybody wants. Apparently, just nobody wants to go to them, really, unless it's there. It seems like everyone's last resort is the Phillies. I mean, I think we've said all we could say. You guys pretty well, you know, covered it way better than I ever could. So, but going on, I mean, I don't think, you know, there's anything else to say about it. What do you guys think about Pomerantz?
Going to be na 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 na. Hey hey hey. Goodbye. That guy sucks. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was driving back from Miami when that news came across 98.5. And honestly, I don't remember having a sense of relief that there was, like, he was gone and he wasn't going to be, like, I was so relieved, like, that somehow Pomerantz, like, didn't end up back here on, like, a prove it year. So thank God he's someone else's problem. That guy sucks. He sucks in so many different ways. He can't throw strikes. He's so inconsistent with his fastball. And I'm not talking about location. I'm talking about, like, one start he's throwing 86, the next start he's throwing 92. It's like, bro, like, no one else in Major League Baseball has that issue. His best pitch is his breaking pitch. If you have a lineup that is hell bent on making him throw it for a strike, he sucks. He can't stay healthy. He sucks. The stupid look on his face after he gives up a 3-run home run after your offense just gave you the lead. Like, I won't miss any of it. Bye.
Terry.
That was his 2018 season in a nutshell, or a bombshell maybe, but, you know, in Jeremy's case. I just 2017, we won the division, and, you know, he was a big part of that, and that was his best season, and it's kind of surprising that he really fell off a cliff, and maybe he's still falling, I don't know. But, I mean, he was 17-6 with a 3.32 ERA, started 32 games, which was a career high, and he started out as like a reliever slash spot starter and then kind of ascended to that. And so really good, you know, in 2017, he was the no-brainer game two starter, you know, against Houston. And unfortunately that didn't work out well. But like Jeremy said, he just kind of fell off the cliff, and I don't think he doesn't really have enough upside at this point to really justify winging it for one more year just to see. That's how bad his 2018 was. And the Giants, that's a perfect fit for him because it's, you know, they're in a rebuild, sort of, whether they want to admit it or not. Their ballpark, I forget the name of it. I think it's still AT&T Park. That's the most pitcher-friendly park in Major League Baseball. So for his sake, and I don't wish any ill will on him, but I'm glad he's not our problem, but that is a good place to try to revive your career if it can be revived.
I mean, as far as the rest of the pen, I mean, we talked about it, you know, briefly. I mean, do you think with the starters, you know, being you know, being who they are, being you know, pretty freaking good and everything, I mean, do you think the pen will hold up, or that are they gonna I don't know about bring somebody up necessarily, but, you know, snag somebody up in spring training? Or, well, like, logically, what do you think is gonna happen right now?
There was one name kicked around, and it would be a really inexpensive addition, and that's Sean Kelly. I don't know if I mentioned that to you guys before the show. He came from the Nationals last year and kind of was infamous for he was pitching in relief against the Mets, and the Nationals were up like some disgusting score. It was literally like 24-1, and then he gave up a multi-run home run, and this was at Citi Field in Queens. And out of anger that he gave up that home run, he took his glove and slammed it on the ground and just kind of made a scene about it. And then he was DFA'd the next day. Literally DFA'd the next day. And the Nationals were a dumpster fire. They thought, what was his name? They traded him. Brandon Kinsler. They traded him, their second best reliever behind Doolittle, to the Cubs because they thought that Kinsler was the clubhouse rat and giving information to Jeff Passan. And that was the sole reason for trading him. And Passan later came out and said, you know, I, you know, had never had any contact whatsoever with Kinsler. He wasn't the guy you guys were thinking he was. So the Nationals gave him away for nothing. And then a few weeks later, the Sean Kelly incident happens. He gets DFA'd and then was picked up by Oakland, which I thought, oh, what a brilliant move, because they have Blake Treinen, who was like a top three closer last year. And then I think they already had Rodney at that point. And then Kelly was a nice complimentary guy. And guys on the team like Harper and Max Scherzer, none of them had a problem with what Kelly did. And everyone was kind of surprised he was DFA'd, but that's what they chose to do. And Dave Martinez as well. That caught him off guard, their manager. So getting back to who he is real quick, if the Red Sox do get him, and I guess there are a couple teams connected to him, he's a complimentary type guy. He's never really been an eighth inning guy, certainly not a ninth inning guy. You know, he'd be brought in like the seventh inning or so. I would consider him to be an upgrade over Heath Hembree. I wanted to compare him to Barnes, but Barnes's strikeout per nine is off the charts. Kelly is a 9.7 and typically hovers right around nine. But the only thing is he's going to be 35 years old before the season starts, and it would almost certainly be a one-year deal. So he's more of a stabilizer, I would say, than really an impact guy. So, but that's the only name I have really seen other than the Kimbrel whispers. But unfortunately,
so
we haven't been too busy in that area.
Yeah, Terry and I differ on this quite a bit with the bullpen, and I'm just going to hit on it quickly because I mentioned it, I think, two podcasts ago. But with this reliever that Terry's talking about, he threw his glove and they like DFA'd him like that night. They didn't like let him back on the team plane. The most ridiculous thing, like, baseball has shifted away from the hoity-toity old days where if you pimp a home run or stand in the batter's box a little bit, you get thrown at. Like, baseball has become something that has more flair, and the reason why baseball has tightened the rules with throwing at people and everything else, because they want people to pimp home runs. That's what attracts the younger baseball fan. So they want you to bat flip, and they want you to stand there in the batter's box, in my opinion, act like a douchebag. But, you know, I'm still from the old guard, but I enjoy and understand that the game has to evolve. So it doesn't bother me. If I was playing, I wouldn't do that. But the fact that this guy threw his glove was clearly a sign of frustration with his own. It wasn't like he was blaming anyone. Like, he made a bad pitch, and he obviously was upset. And some people tied that situation to him being upset that he was in a game that was 24-3 or whatever the score was. Okay. Now, how did the Nationals handle it? Like idiots. E-Rod did the exact same thing in his start in the ALDS. No, it was the World Series. He did the same thing in the World Series. Sorry. Same thing in the World Series. What did the Red Sox do? Praise them. Apologize that he was still in the game, in the position to have to give up that home run, because we all agreed he was kept in that game at least one batter too long. So it's a microcosm of you get guys in better systems and they perform better. I have no issue with that. If they want, there's spots in the bullpen. Like, hey, you know, this isn't like a free puppy sign in the front yard of a family who's got a pair of golden retrievers. But, you know, it's kind of like a free puppy sign. Like, we need relievers, we need bodies. Where Terry and I differ is the Red Sox, and I had the list roughed out in my notes from a couple days ago, and if I can find it quickly, I'll just mention it. There's 7 or 8 major league ready starters, and assuming health, you go with 4 for the first 2 weeks, and then you go with 5. So you're going to have starting pitchers that are going to end up in the bullpen. That's what's going to happen here. They don't want to lose guys like Velasquez and Wright. And so what they're going to do is they're going to have to put them in the bullpen. And at the end of the day, that's where the arms are going to come from. And then the second thing is that at some point, the Red Sox are going to go get an arm, whether it be a closer because they don't get Kimbrel and they're having trouble with the closer position, or whether they're really simply just waiting for the bad teams to be bad so that they can go and poach guys on the last year of their deals for low end prospects. They're gonna mark my words, the bullpen on opening day will not be the bullpen at the time the season ends. It just won't be. There'll be massive changes. If Kimbrel doesn't stay, I bet you the guy whoever ends up being the quote unquote closer won't be the closer at the end of the year. So I really think that this team is talented enough to carry a bad bullpen early until they can get it and improve it through the trade market. And again, that just so we have, and I found my list: Sale, Price, Porcello, Eovaldi, E-Rod, and then I have Velasquez, Wright, and Brian Johnson in the bullpen. And then with Eovaldi, we've already talked about this. Eovaldi signed a contract that looks an awful lot like Chapman's closer deal. So if there's a position where they need a closer or whatever, Eovaldi could be that guy, which you go Sale, Price, Porcello, E-Rod, probably Wright. And then you have Eovaldi in the late inning situations with Vasquez and Brian Johnson in the bullpen. So they have a ton of options because they're that deep in the starting rotation.
I'm a little uncomfortable with Wright's lack of durability. I would feel better about things if he was more durable. I'm not crazy about Brian Johnson in a relief role. I think he serves better as a starter, but I'm uncomfortable also dealing Brian Johnson because we don't know what the health status of Chris Sale will be, and maybe we might need that depth late in the season. So it's really finicky. I do like Velasquez in a relief role. I think he's a good sixth, seventh inning type guy and can give the Red Sox some stability there. I also think Blake Swihart could net a solid arm, like a Sean Kelly type arm, if we don't end up signing him. I think we could easily pluck a guy like that out of maybe Seattle, Miami, maybe San Francisco if they get off to a bad start. Just a team that's not really expecting to contend that might happen to use a a catcher with some upside. And so that's another scenario, but I don't think we're not going to get a stud reliever at this point. I don't believe. I don't think we have the pieces and the farm to really do it in July. I mean, I suppose we do, but I just don't know. I don't know if that would be worth it if it was a rental type situation. So we're just going to have to hope that, Brazier is who he was in the short sample size. Maybe Barnes, he's kind of been improving year after year, so maybe that trend continues. And I keep bringing up Travis Lakins and Durbin Feltman. I think Lakins could possibly make the big club right away if he has a decent spring training. The only reason he wasn't added in September, when the call-ups happened, was he's got a bit of an injury history and they just didn't want to put the workload on him. So, but he basically is major league ready and does project as a late inning reliever. So who knows? Here's one last. Go ahead.
Sorry. I didn't know you had one last thing. I was just going to say, I totally agree that he's going to be on the big league club. And I hope that they're going to let him start the season to work in slowly, where maybe he doesn't pitch too often the first couple of weeks so he gets acclimated. I know he's young. I know he was just pitching in college like 18 months ago. I do think he's going to be a factor. The other thing is I love your Swihart point. I love your Swihart point. You know how I love to disagree with you, Terry. Swihart has value. You can get a reliever or relievers, or a reliever and depth in the minor league system, or a reliever and whatever with Swihart. I think he's that coveted in Major League Baseball. And by the way, last year there was a ton of interest in Swihart, but for whatever reason, the Red Sox were we're not moving him. We're going to DFA Hanley before we move Swihart. And then finally, just to clarify my point, the guys I mentioned that are the sixth, seventh, and eighth starters, Brian Johnson, Velasquez, and Wright, if that's the way it works out, I don't see them in late innings. I see them building out the back of the bullpen, the longer inning situations. So I'm not counting on those guys for outs in the seventh and eighth. I'm counting for those guys to give the depth. And especially in a situation where you have to manage the innings of Eovaldi, two Cy Youngs, Price because he's a bitch, and then Sale because he's been injured. So, let's say Sale's in a game and it's 8-1. No more Sale, right? If Price stayed up too late playing Fortnite the night before and he's up 8-1, and he gets through his fifth inning and he's going to get his win, that's where you see Velasquez. And the same with Eovaldi for his injury concerns. So that it's a back end of the bullpen type of situation with those guys.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And I wasn't really – I'm glad you made that point, because I wasn't, expecting any of them to be setup type guys, just, six, maybe seventh inning guys at the most, depending on – who's available and who isn't. Another thing I just thought of, and this is kind of a stretch, but who knows, maybe it becomes a possibility. You could use those guys in, dare I say it, like maybe an opener, like have like a, a traditional reliever open, and then you could have a Velazquez, a Johnson guy come in like the third inning or so, and maybe get you through the sixth or seventh in that scenario. Some teams are tinkering with that. Oakland did it in the one game wild card. I expect maybe the Reds, the Brewers to continue with that. And, just an idea. I'm not saying that they'll do it, but those are good candidates if they want to try something like that.
Well, Liz, I know that this is a tough topic for you because you're not, you're a Devil Rays fan and you're not so interested in like the seventh spot in the Red Sox bullpen. So, but I just wanted to give you a chance to kind of weigh in if you have anything.
No, I think you guys covered it perfectly and you're exactly right. I have absolutely no opinion. Although I look forward to having a little more of an opinion, this year, obviously I'll be paying a little closer attention, to them. Obviously I get MLB TV every year. So I'll definitely be able to watch a majority of the games as long as I'm home in time for work, usually, or in time from work. I'm usually home by 7:30. So I should be able to catch, most of it. And I have, two TVs in my living room. So I can have one on my big TV and one on my little TV. So I can watch the Rays too and not feel like such a sellout. But speaking of rivals in the division, the biggest one, of course, lots went on with the Yankees, in the past week or so. They managed to dump Sonny Gray, Adam Ottavino. And then also they signed a former Ray who came back from a very serious medical condition, Danny Farquhar.
Yeah, so people who don't know about Danny Farquhar, I'm going to spell his name for you so you can Google it. Farguar. This guy was pitching for the White Sox and had a collapsed on the mound and ended up having a brain aneurysm. And from what I've read, the White Sox staff identified it like literally as they were jogging out to the mound and save this guy's life as a result. Like the timing of their ability to get him medical attention and their immediate diagnosis of this not being like, a lightheaded situation saved this guy's life. The White Sox hung his jersey in their dugout every single game for the rest of that year. It was really like a scary, scary situation where they thought not only was his baseball career over, but that maybe he was going to have a life-altering effect. So the fact that this guy is back in baseball, signed by the Yankees on a contending team, he's good enough, I think, to make the Yankees, although their bullpen is stacked, so he's not going to be a lead guy, but he has a decent chance to make the club. It's really, really a good, like, heartwarming story about a guy's ability to benefit from high-end medical treatment in a really tough situation, getting medical treatment like on the pitcher's mound. So it's kind of an amazing story all the way around, from starting with the people that treated him right after he collapsed to his ability to come back from such a horrific situation. So I specifically identified that this was something I wanted to bring up to our listeners. I know we have some listeners in Europe and across the world, and this might be one of those stories that slipped through the cracks. So I really do encourage you, after you finish listening to the entire podcast, to Google this guy and the story of what happened to him and his ability to come back. It's really, really cool. It's a slow time in the baseball season. These goddamn players are not signing. So if you need something to get you through the next couple of weeks, looking up Danny Farquhar is worth your time. And it's someone that seems like you'd want to root for, even though he may not be on your team. So that's what I had to say about this particular player and signing.
I am more familiar with brain aneurysms than I wish that I was. And the survival rate for those, last I knew, is only 30%. So 70% of people that have them don't survive. And my mother had one about 20 years ago. survived it. My cousin, who was really one of my best friends that I grew up with, I mean, we were really close, my age, had one right around age 30, survived it. And then we had an uncle back in the late 80s, was 37 years old, had one and did not survive it. So they're scary, and you don't really see them coming, you know, other than maybe literally seconds before. And, you know, like Jeremy was just saying, he was just pitching. Like, he was just pitching in the game and then had one suddenly. And just really fortunate that, you know, that it was identified, and that he not only did he survive, but he's going to have the opportunity to resume his career again. So it's some people, you know, for anyone who has the attitude, you know, miracles happen every day. The odds of him getting back to this point is we're drastically not on his side. And, you know, now he's with the Yankees and probably no better spot to be. So,
you know, I'll be rooting for him. And I've seen, like, you know, from him throwing out the first pitch in a White Sox game with his family. I have followed it. I was like, I don't know if I was watching that game or I was watching MLB Network when it happened. So, like, I was watching it in real time as, like, it was being brought to the attention of baseball fans. And so I've kind of followed along as he's recovered and kind of rooted for him privately. And it's one of those things where it's just cool to see someone like that overcome. Like, I didn't know those stats. I've heard those stats, but Terry putting them in perspective. I mean, he had a higher chance to pass away than he did to survive, and now he's back in the league. So, really, 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 really cool situation. Now, another pitching situation with the Yankees that was, like, I think comical and just handled really poorly was Sonny Gray. This week was finally traded to the Cincinnati Reds.
Mm-hmm.
I dislike the Yankees. I don't know if you guys know that, but I think they do a lot of things wrong, and their handling of Sonny Gray was wrong. He obviously underperformed. They traded for him and put all the pressure on him immediately to be someone that would be on the top of their rotation, and he crumbled under the pressure. And we've talked about it on this podcast so much about how you just never know when you take someone from a small market and put them in Boston and New York, what the reaction's going to be. Well, you took Sonny Gray from Oakland and you put him in New York, and he crumbled. They did not support him. They publicly acknowledged that they didn't want him anymore. I mean, I'm sorry. It makes me feel a little bit better because I just praised the Yankees for signing Farquhar, but they handled that thing just poorly. And I don't know what the point of, like, shitting all over Sonny Gray was, because you lower his value. It seems like they actually got a pretty fair trade for him. But that whole situation from the trading him and anointing him as a top of the rotation guy instead of just letting him go out and pitch, I thought was handled poorly. When he pitched poorly, I thought they let him in certain games fail and then continue to fail instead of protect him and get him out of the game. They put him in big starts, and the track record was not there for him to perform in those starts. And then at the end of the day, they basically held a press conference and just shit all over him. So the whole thing was just handled really poorly on some level. And I can't believe I'm about to say this. I don't know Sonny Gray. I almost feel bad for the fact that he got no support from a team that traded for him. So another guy where, he sucks so bad, you know, that you almost were glad when he was starting, especially, like, you know, the Sox are going to, you know, get out of their slump today because Gray's pitching. So it's one of those situations where they moved on from him. Their pitching rotation still, in my opinion, a dumpster fire. They have no depth whatsoever to speak of, and they traded him to the other into the National League, where he's not going to be a factor either way.
Yeah, he, that was a good point. You know, Brian Cashman was just a pompous ass when talking about, you know, when talking about Sonny Gray like that. I don't think the Red Sox got that brutal with Pablo Sandoval and still haven't. You know, they even lied about his body fat percentage for him. But with Gray, I mean, he's going to a small market team, and there's a lot of speculation that maybe he's a small market guy. His numbers in Yankee Stadium weren't good. His numbers on the road, though, while a Yankee, were like in the threes or something, his ERA. So he was pretty serviceable on the road, but just couldn't pitch well in Yankee Stadium. And I know he doesn't pitch well at Fenway Park as well. So the upside to Cincinnati is it is a small market team. However, it is one of the more home run friendly stadiums in Major League Baseball. So I'm a little apprehensive as to how that might turn out. I know the Padres were connected to him, and maybe that was, I thought they were a better fit, but the Reds were more motivated. His pitching coach from college, I think he went to Vanderbilt, which is actually where David Price went, is the Reds pitching coach. So there's some familiarity there. So maybe they can rekindle something. I'm fairly optimistic he'll kind of return to form. He did also sign a 3-year extension worth, I think, roughly $10 million a year, and he had a signing bonus in there. That's not a lot. Like 4 or 5 years ago, we were thinking Sonny Gray could be one of the next premier aces, you know, and when I think of that, I think of like $150 million plus, you know, all the way up to what Price, you know, and Kershaw might have gotten. But somewhere, you know, somewhere in the comfortable nine figures. And he's taken such a, you know, he took a, you know, a $30 million deal. And, you know, if he goes out and has a bad year, he wouldn't have been worth anything. So I guess he kind of had to weigh the risk. And He still could sign a decent contract when that runs up, should he pan out. And the Yankees, it was a three-team deal. Seattle gets in it, and Seattle seems to like three-team deals, you know? Like, they see two teams getting hot and heavy, and they're like, oh, let us join in. And, you know, that I'm trying to keep it somewhat appropriate, but that's like their third three-team deal. That was way more appropriate than the dick joke from like five episodes ago. And
it's a baseball three-way.
Yeah, and the prospect the Yankees got, Shed Long, is a guy that they don't have to protect just yet on the 40-man roster, which is kind of still a little bit over my head as far as that works. But they are a prospect-laden organization, so it was important to them to get someone that didn't require that type of protection right away. But Sonny Gray is no longer in hell anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, watching him mainly when he was with Oakland. I mean, most of his career was with Oakland, and he was never like a 100% lights out, you know, kind of a guy, but he was always really, really good. And I'm happy to see him go to a team where hopefully he can thrive again. You know, it sucks to see a guy who was so good go to a team, you know, like the Yankees or like Boston or the Dodgers, and, you know, and have the moment be too big, I guess, you know, for them, and just crush under that pressure, you know, of playing there for, you know, for 81 games. I mean, that's obviously they're not pitching 81 games, but you know what I mean? You know, they have a lot more starts there than they do away. It's not like they're just coming in and you know, pitching every now and then, you know, for an away series or something like that. So I think, you know, he's got a fresh start, or as fresh as it can be, you know, in Cincinnati. Hopefully he can do well and help them, you know, win a little bit, because they've been a pretty sad state of affairs, you know, the past couple years.
Even with – Well, let me just mention this real quick, and then we'll transition. I just wanted to point out, even with his 4.90 ERA last year, and then the worst season of his career in 2016 with a 5.69 ERA, he's still a career 3.66 guy. So you know, there has been a lot of success in between those bad years. So I wish him well. I wish him well.
Yeah, I wish him well, too. A couple things. One is, Liz, I disagree with your point about seeing guys go to the Yankees and fail. Nothing makes me happier.
Well, of course, but I hate
now, with that said, with that,
I like, you know,
caveat time here. Not with that said, The Yankees fucked this guy. They fucked him. They gave him no chance. They basically anointed him as like the ace slash second guy. And if they just let him be, who knows what would have happened, you know, or if they did the inverse, which is just say, hey, look, he's here to chip in as the fifth starter. You know, who knows? But they held him out immediately as their next ace. He was coming off an injury where he did just enough in Oakland to show that he could pitch, but he was not back to who he was before his injury. And they put him in an impossible situation, and he clearly wasn't the type of guy that was going to succeed in New York. And then you add on top of that all these expectations directly from the organization, not from the media, not from the fans. The organization came out and were like, this is who we want him to be. And then he couldn't be that guy. And then he just continued to crumble under the pressure because they continue to put him in terrible situations. So now that he's out of the New York, I will kind of root for the guy. And I wouldn't mind seeing him with like a 3.36 ERA and winning games for the Reds next year. So that's my kind of last point on Sonny Gray.
Let me make one last observation. Maybe it's relevant, maybe it isn't, but he was a 4.90 ERA guy last year, and that was with Aaron Boone. After the trade, he made 11 starts as a Yankee in 2017, coming from Oakland. 3.72 ERA under Girardi. So I'm just wondering, you know, maybe Boone isn't the guy that's going to kind of help right the ship for some players, and we certainly saw it with John Farrell. I mean, I'll forever blame his terrible leadership on the reason we don't have Travis Shaw, and we might have to sit through a horrifying season of Tyler Thornburg. So I'll be interesting to see how the Boone effect, you know, continues through 2019.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting and good for the, you know, for the Sox, obviously. But, you know, if things continue to crumble. I had one more question about the Yankees, though. I think on the last show you guys were talking about the Ottavino signing and everything and the bullpen. And then I actually was trying to find a reasonable Yankee podcast to listen to and see what they're talking about. And, of course... Well, I found one. It wasn't too bad. I mean, but
were they broadcasting from a penitentiary?
Yes. No.
I don't want to say it on the air, but I know of a good one. If you guys ever want to listen to it, I listen to it every week. But I'll be curious to see if it's the same one that was.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and look because I just usually search on Stitcher and look for the most popular ones. And everything, and see if they're even recording right now, because most podcasts are not. So thank you, listeners, for listening to us every week, or listening to Terry and Jeremy anyway. But I was really starting to think, because they were talking about how, you know, they're worried about starting pitching and, you know, wondering what's going to happen, because they see the weakness there, you know, just like you guys do. And I was wondering if they're bolstering their bullpen with the anticipation of one of two things, either knowing that they have weak starters and they're saying, okay, we need more bullpen guys to be able, or better bullpen, you know, guys maybe, you know, to be able to take on those extra innings, because we know our starters are only going to go, you know, five innings or whatever, like around that. They're going to be less than seven or eight. You know, we're not betting on that anymore. Or, you know, maybe they're gonna toy with the whole just a starter, you know, issue. You know, having the starter, only the actual starter, only really be in for two innings, and then using some guys in long relief and not using the starters as much. You think either of those would be a possibility, or are they just too old school to even think about doing either one?
Go ahead, Jeremy.
That's a loaded question, I know.
Oh, we lose Jeremy.
Oh, sorry. I'm here. Sorry. Okay. I hit the unmute button and it didn't unmute. It's never going to happen with this rotation because could you imagine going to Chris Sale and be like, "Hey, Chris, we want you to come in the second inning." Like, no. Price, like, come on, please. You have veteran top end rotation. They're never going to go with this, with that system. It's perfect for the Devil Rays. Couple of reasons. One, they clearly buy in to Cash as their manager. And then they, except for Snell, they're a bunch of unproven guys. And so that situation, just works better with younger teams, younger rosters, guys not making a ton of money. I'm sorry, you're just not going to go to a guy making $31 million a year and be like, "Hey, we want you to come in the second inning." It's just not going to happen, at least in Boston. I think it's perfect for the Rays. I think we talked about why we thought we all agreed Cash should win the manager of the year, and that was one of the main reasons. So for me, it makes no sense with a team that has veteran high end valued starting pitching. It works perfect with younger pitching, younger managers, where there's going to be more flexibility.
Let me just get to the rotation real quick, because I'm not really with you guys on their so-called weakness that they have. And just briefly going over some numbers here. Severino, 2017, 2.98 ERA, 2018, 3.38. He had a hell of a first half and was on pace to possibly win a Cy Young, you know, had Sale not, you know, went in the toilet as far as his durability. And then, obviously, Snell, you know, ended up stealing it through the second half. But he still has immense upside. He's got a low whip every year. His strikeout per nine is always over 10, which is, you know, the threshold for, you know, being really good. James Paxton, he never in his career has he posted a 4-something ERA for the season. The highest he's ever been, which was in 2015, was a 3.90. He's a 3.42 ERA guy. His strikeout per nine the last 2 years was even higher than Severino, so he's definitely a high strikeout type guy. Then you have Masahiro Tanaka, 3.75 last year. You know, that's kind of modest. His worst year, and the only time he's ever posted a 4-something ERA, that was 2017. You know, he was a 4.74, but they went to Game 7 of the ALCS that year, and he posted a 1.38 postseason ERA in 2017. And he's kind of a reverse Chris Sale in terms of durability. Very sluggish and slow out of the gates the first half, but he comes on strong the second half. And his postseason ERA over his career is 1.50. So great postseason pitcher, you know, so far. Jay Happ, 4 straight years of an ERA 3.65 or less. Not a lot of guys get on base with him, and 4 years in a row, 25-plus starts. I honestly, in terms of the regular season, I like that signing better than the Eovaldi signing, really. When we get to the postseason, maybe Eovaldi is a better postseason pitcher. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to, you know that once and for all this year. And then finally, CC Sabathia. We love to give fat jokes. Can he field a bunt? No. But he's been sub 4 ERA the last 3 seasons in a row. And his ERA has gone down year after year the last 3 in a row. And 27 plus starts, you know, or more in that span. So this isn't a bad rotation. Like, I can't get there. I don't have a strong argument, you know, to say that they're better than the Red Sox. I think if Chris Sale isn't healthy, yeah, I probably would lean on the Yankees as the better rotation. But I don't really have a strong argument either way on that in the month of January. But that's a very serviceable rotation, and it's probably going to be a top 4 or 5 rotation at the worst in the league. My only real concern is really with Paxton. Can he stay healthy? But he had 24 starts in 2017, 28 starts last year. So I just, we should be concerned, and that bullpen is absolutely stacked, and it frustrates me beyond belief that the Yankees value bullpen so much more than the Boston Red Sox do, you know, and every year that's a priority. I didn't think last trade deadline they were going to go get Zach Britton because their bullpen was fine. They didn't need Zach Britton, but they did it because they felt like it, and then they signed him again to a three-year deal with an option, And now they have Ottavino, who's a consistent 3-something ERA guy to slot in probably in the 7th inning. So I'm concerned. I'm concerned. And if you could tell me right now that Chris Sale is going to pitch 26 starts and be healthy and effective for all 6 months, I don't care if he's a Cy Young guy. I don't even care if he's a top five guy. I just want him to be a serviceable pitcher for 6 months. And, you know, he falls off a cliff in August and September. And I'm not comfortable with it. So that's my concern, you know, as far as the Yankees go.
Yeah, I mean, I just strongly disagree. They have no depth. CC's not going to give you anything. Tanaka's goes through periods where he gets a ton of ground balls and, you know, has 7 innings at low pitch counts. But he also is – they've identified that his Tommy John ligament is, like, basically frayed. And he's been a candidate for a Tommy John type injury for 3 years. It hasn't happened, but he's never going to be fully healthy unless it either goes or he just has it done anyways. Severino, as good as he was in the beginning of the year, was not great at the second half of the year. Paxton, to me, is a great unknown. He could go the way of Sonny Gray. He could easily go the way of Sonny Gray. And Terry is a world's going to burn type of guy, and I'm more of an optimist. I like the fact that even if Sale isn't Sale, we have a tremendous amount of depth in our rotation. We have 8 major league ready starters that'll start on almost any team. So to me, we have a lot more room for error with injuries, with poor performance, where we have other guys that can be in that spot. The Yankees aren't in that position. And to me, the bullpens aren't close, and I get that. I've already kind of talked on, I think the Red Sox bullpen will be vastly different by the time we get to August 1st, but that's where I'm at with it. The Yankees, as far as being better than the Red Sox, it's possible. I'm not one of these people that's like, it's never going to happen, you know, but the Red Sox have so much talent. Mookie, the whole outfield's back, the whole infield's back, the catchers are back. I mean, you know, we're missing Kelly and we don't have a closer right now. But we've got a team coming back that just was clearly the best team in baseball, maybe one of the best teams in baseball in a really long time. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to buy into like the world's burning situation. And the statement that you can't tell the difference between who's the better starting rotation in my mind. I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe at the end of the day, they will be. Maybe they all stay healthy and that those 5 guys start and end the year and they have a better overall ERA, but to me, that's just not what it looks like is going to happen. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
We have the best top 2 start. Our best 2 are better than their best 2, but it's not drastic. I mean, Severino, I mean, his ERA was 3.38 last year and sub 3 the year before, just barely. And Paxton, like I said, never been above 390. Now, Sale and Price are definitely better than those two, but Tanaka, Happ, and even Sabathia, like I said, his ERA has dropped and dropped and dropped, and he starts several games, more than Erod even. So those 3 years in a row have been better than Porcello, Erod, and Eovaldi. And, well, other than the Cy Young year for Porcello, obviously, but I think we can all agree he's not that guy. Their numbers are just better. You know, their career numbers are better. Their season-for-season numbers are better. And they've been rock solid the last 3 years in a row, those 3 starters, Happ, Tanaka, and Sabathia. So I have to take that at face value. I just can't. I can't do it. Their back end is better than our back end, and their top end, even though, like I said, not quite as good as ours, still pretty damn good, and still start a ton of games. So, and then you know, even if one of them does have a bad game, they're going to have a pretty damn good bullpen guy coming in. We're going to have someone we're just hoping for the best with, you know, in the fifth or sixth if we run into that problem as well. So this is going to be a dogfight. And here's another thing. The Yankees last year had a 2017 Red Sox season, basically. You know, they came into the playoffs with a head of steam. They won a lot of games. And then they died in the ALCS. We did that in 2017. We came back the next year, won the World Series. I think they're going to have their 2018 this year. Not 108 wins, but they're going to win the division, possibly be the best team in baseball, and hopefully not win the World Series. But yeah, I don't know. That's it. I don't. You can, if you want to weigh in again, that's fine. But
I mean, I've already said I disagree. And the other thing is that there are some track record situations with directly between the Red Sox and the Yankees where like Eovaldi is an absolute Yankees killer. And we seemingly get to Severino. You know, so what I've already kind of said what I'm going to say. We see it differently. And I think, frankly, and I think you'll agree with this, Terry, we see it kind of in line with the way we are generally as sports fans. You're more of a pessimist. You know, some of your tweets recently about the bullpen and stuff are just like, you know, the world's burning and everything else. And I'm more like they're the Red Sox, and they're going to find ways to improve weaknesses, and they're going to play on their strengths, which is obviously their lineup, their outfield, their depth in the starting rotation, and they're going to find ways to get better and then fill holes as it's needed to, and they're going to be in it at the end, and so are the Yankees. And that's why I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to, can you beat the Yankees in another series? You know, whether it be a 5-game set or a 7-game set, I mean, that's a real possibility. And the Red Sox, at least recently, have been really good against the Yankees. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Well, I hope I'm wrong. I really do, you know, and I hope we, you know, we've won it 3 years in a row. 4 in a row sounds good to me, but you know, a lot of red flags. But like you said, you know, we see it the way we see it, and long season. So, yeah. Liz, what do you think? I mean, I think your Rays, I mean, they won 90 last year, made some moves. You have potentially 3 starters. You know, you got your Cy Young, you got Glasnow, and you got Charlie Morton.
Yeah. Every year is such a crapshoot. I just can't even make any predictions. Like I really hope that they can recreate what they did last year. I mean, I have absolutely no prediction. Any prediction that I'm gonna give is either not gonna do them justice, or I'm going to be completely wrong. So all I can do is be the best Rays fan I can be optimistic, cautiously optimistic, as I say, and hope for the best. That's really all I can do. And I know that's a lackluster answer, but that's all I got.
This is an appropriate time for me to just quickly bring up Malik Smith, who was traded to the Seattle Mariners.
Traded back to the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah. So we spoke about the three of us spoke about this before we started recording. I just think this is hilarious. So he gets asked the question, what's going to be the biggest difference between playing for the Devil Rays and the Seattle Mariners? And his response is that there'll be fans in the stands. One of the bigger ricochet shots ever at the Devil Rays, and I take ricochet shots all the time, but from a guy who played in that city to say that, it's just so damning. And Liz, not to like totally trash on your team, because you guys are probably going to be a 90-win team again. You're just in the best division in baseball. It's amazing that team has a 90-win season under their belt. They've clearly improved, and unless you go to the dark recesses of the web and Twitter and find like the diehards who are like, hey, don't sleep on the Rays. Like, there seems to be no buzz about the Devil Rays. So I think they're going to be good, and I think they're probably going to be a playoff team. And if I had to bet whether they were going to be in the playoff in a wild card or out of the playoffs, I would think that they're going to be one of the wild card teams. And they've just done a lot well with the roster and sensible contracts and everything else. So I think the division is going to be a little deeper this year. The Orioles are going to absolutely suck. So they're just going to be, and all three teams will beat up on the Orioles, and that's going to be the reason why you're going to have three 90 plus win teams again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could very well be how it plays out. And I don't think anyone is going, at least in the AL East, will win 100 this year. I really don't. And I mean, 97, 98 wins, that's a phenomenal year. And I mean, more often than not, that's usually the best team in the league. You know, the Astros won, I think, 100 or 101 2 years in a row, something like that. And then Yankees won 100, Red Sox won 108. But I think we all come back down to earth a little bit more next year. And I think the Rays will be a part of that as well. And the Red Sox destroyed the Rays for most of the year up until nickname weekend, where they had the funky jerseys with the weird names. And we get swept 2 years in a row, you know, during that weekend. And it was to the Rays this time. But I think the Rays are going to be pretty competitive. I think the Red Sox were, what, one game up on the Yankees? It was like 10 games to 9 or something. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if it's in that ballpark, you know, 11 to 8, 10 to 9, something like that, you know, Red Sox versus Rays. Any final thoughts before we wrap?
No. I think I'm said a lot, and I think the big thing we need to have happen here is we need to have Harper and Machado sign, and then we can transition from the hot stove season, because once they sign, all the rest of the people will fall quickly in line. That'll be a really busy podcast, and then we can transition into, frankly, we can transition into the 2019 season.
Sounds good to me. A few weeks out. Well, all right, maybe at the end of the weekend. I'm going to be on a road trip, but I should be home by Sunday afternoon, so maybe tentatively a show that night or Monday, depending on how everyone feels. But certainly no later than midweek anyway, at the worst case.
All right, well, thanks again, and we'll see everyone on the next one.
All right.
Sounds good.
Have a good night. Bye.
Have a good one.
Another fun show. I think that was episode 113. Isn't that funny how I never know what the episode is at the end of the show? But like Jeremy said, hopefully some signings, you know, happen, and all of the rest of the dominoes can fall into place. The one thing I didn't bring up, I wish I did, it was Mike Moustakas maybe going to the Yankees. That there's nothing really developing there, but there is an obvious fit if he's going to be a first baseman, so maybe we can dive into that next show and maybe talk about some of the non-Harper Machado free agents that are kind of being held hostage by those big two on the next show anyway. And it was certainly good to have Liz back with us tonight as well. So anyway, we'll be back more sooner than later. Everybody enjoy your weekend. No football this weekend. Patriots in the Super Bowl. So not sure what the sports agenda will be. Probably some Celtics Bruins going on. But everyone enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Red Sox Nation, it's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.